Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now we're back with more of our look at all of today's matches on Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Let's go!
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Welcome back to Atlanta Soccer Tonight, catching up with an old friend, Eric Krakauer, TV commentator for Charlotte FC. What's up, Eric?
Enjoying the World Cup. Thanks for having me. Good to see you guys.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. The last time we were talking, Eric, you were a little nervous because you spoke a bit of trash to Argentina fans after their result, and then it was your team, Portugal's opportunity to get onto the stage. How do you feel in that 3-2 victory that they sort of set their tone for the World Cup?
Well, if that's the tone that they've set, then I think we might be in a little bit of trouble and my nails need to grow out a little bit more before Uruguay, because it wasn't a particularly pleasing or convincing performance. They had their moments, as expected, Portugal in control of possession, but lacking penetration and every so often a little bit open in transition, defensive transition. And then more worryingly, showing a little bit of immaturity in its approach to the game after going 3-1 up, and also evidencing some of the mistakes that have been so costly in the past. I still have nightmares of Diogo Costa's huge mistake. He was saved by the footballing gods when Iñaki Williams slipped.
It was a crazy match back and forth, and we'd been wondering coming into this with some of the possible turmoil with Portugal as to how they would handle it. How do you feel about that aspect of it after game one?
I don't think, look, I was never particularly worried about the noise outside of the Portuguese camp. I think the media was trying to make more of that than there actually was. When I say media, I think mostly international media, because the Portuguese press was very quick to debunk any issues whatsoever between players. And of course, more specifically between Bruno Fernandes and Cristiano Ronaldo. So that was immediately squashed. But my worry was that if the Portuguese communications team didn't get ahead of this soon enough, it could become a little bit of a distraction. They never really got ahead of it, but it didn't become the distraction that I worried about. So all in all, things are well, harmonious. Of course, there is some breaking news out of the Portuguese camp, which isn't great, but that's more injury related.
Now, Cristiano Ronaldo obviously has been the poster boy for this team for so, so long. But for you, who are the players that really have to step up in this World Cup if Portugal is going to make a run?
Well, the most important player on this team for me is Bernardo Silva. I think that he is, for my money, a top 10 player in the world. If we're going to use sort of, you know, a hierarchy, because those hierarchies, let's be honest, are completely silly, right? What is a top 10 player? But in his position, he most certainly is one of the elite players in the world. He dictates tempo. He's impossible to dispossess no matter where he is on the pitch. If you're a Manchester City fan, you sometimes see him occupy a space in between the two center backs and you wonder why that is happening. And I think the reason is that he's just not going to lose the ball and he's trying to play from a deep position. And you've seen him take up that role a little bit more with Portugal. In fact, earlier today in the press conference leading up to the game against Uruguay, he was asked about his lack of influence against Ghana, and his reaction was sort of to smile a little bit and as if to say, you have no idea what you're talking about. My influence was different, right? I wasn't scoring goals or assisting, but in terms of dictating play, he was, for my money, the most important player on the pitch, even though Bruno Fernandes and, of course, the goal scorers took most of the plaudits.
It feels like there's a little bit of a push-pull with this Portugal team about how attacking they're going to be. And I know that's one of the conversations from the fan perspective. With all this attacking talent, they want to see them just open up and go for it more. How do you feel like Portugal strikes that balance so far? And then against an opponent like Uruguay with all of their experience?
So I'll split – those are two questions, and I will split them very obviously in two. The first answer, let me start by saying that, you know, I'm a big critic of Fernando Santos as a coach. I think in many ways, footballing tactics have bypassed him. You know, he's a guy who coached all three big clubs in Portugal, somebody who was very influential in the 90s and the early aughts, succeeded in Greece, not only at the national level, international level with the Greek national team, but also with clubs like IAK. I think that most of the criticism leveled at Fernando Santos has been that he hasn't been able to get the most out of his attacking talent. And finally, to give him a little bit of credit, he has given them a little bit more license to be creative. And the way that he's done that is by setting up in a 4-4-2 diamond, which basically gives you a six who is more disciplined in his position, but then three midfielders ahead of him who have freedom to exploit pockets of space. And we saw that against Ghana, which made it very difficult for Ghana to track those players. The problem right now facing Portugal is one of personnel. This is a deep squad. There are plenty of players that can come off the bench and make an impact, but they lack verticality. And that has to do more with the player profile that Fernando Santos has available to him than tactics. I'll give you an example. Jota, Diogo Jota of Liverpool, has the profile of a player that Portugal has rarely seen. A guy who is technical, yes, but what really elevates him as a player is his ability to be an agent of chaos, using his pace and his strength. And you take him out of the equation with his injury, and you really don't have a player like that anymore. A guy who doesn't necessarily need the ball at his feet. He can just run and hope to get a long ball behind defenders. And that was really lacking against Ghana. Yes, you have Rafael Leão, who can stretch defenses, but he likes to stretch defenses with the ball at his feet. You know, he's very good on the dribble. He's very explosive in his first couple of moves. And so I think against Uruguay, to sort of bleed into your second question, that is going to be an issue. Because as we saw against South Korea, Uruguay are perfectly happy playing an attritional game, very defensively minded, and then looking to go long in transition using Darwin Nunez on the left wing and Palestri on the right. Although I don't think Palestri will start in this game, given that he wasn't particularly influential and not through any fault of his own. That was just the type of play that Uruguay was focused on. So I think Portugal is going to dominate possession against Uruguay. But if they're not able to penetrate down the middle and carve up the Uruguayans with very quick positional interplays, I think they're going to be in trouble because nobody is going to be able to offer that ball. Well, they'll be able to offer the ball over the top. They just won't have a recipient.
You've talked about the offensive side of the Portuguese side. Defensively, we alluded to the goalkeeper almost nightmare. How concerned are you that you let up two goals? How concerned are you about the defensive style of Portugal?
Well, there's always concern when you concede two goals, especially when you think of Portugal during Santos's reign as a defensive team. I mean, they won Euro 2016 by not conceding too many, except they did concede three. Was it two or three against Hungary in the group stage? I think it was 3-3 that game, which was insane. Gave me heart palpitations. Look, the big news coming out of camp is that Danilo might be out for the tournament. He fractured three ribs during a set piece drill. They're saying that maybe he'll be available for the knockout stages, but, you know, people who have been around soccer, like the three of us, players, coaches, media, when you suffer an injury like that in your ribs, it takes a long time to recover, and you certainly don't want to be a liability from a physical standpoint in a game, especially in a knockout stages of the World Cup. So who fills in that spot is interesting, because Pep is the immediate candidate, considering that he's been a starter forever and one of Portugal's most important players, but he hasn't played since October. He's been injured for Porto. Santos brought a kid, an 18-year-old named Antonio Silva, who has only gotten, I think, 18 professional games under his belt. But in the lead up to the World Cup, they played against Nigeria. He was a starter, played 90 minutes, and he just looked imperious. PSG is already being linked with him, and I think that's a move that will potentially materialize, and that speaks to his talent. But you need a lot more than talent when you're talking about playing at this level, especially against a team that is as savvy as Uruguay.
What are your thoughts on the tournament as a whole? We've seen a lot of scoreless draws, but I feel like as we're getting into the second game for a lot of these teams, the intensity is really picking up, and it feels like the vibe is very different in these game twos than they were in the game ones.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. Absolutely. Look, the nil-nils are obvious to me. You know, given the time of year when this World Cup is being played, with these national teams not having too much time to train together, and knowing that when it comes to these tournaments, you know, teams tend to bunker in and look to play in transition. Well, the biggest problem you have as a team is having enough time with each other to really work on attacking processes, breaking down defenses. In fact, that was the issue today with Japan against Costa Rica. Japan, far more talented, but a team that has proven over a number of years that despite their talent, they've always had difficulties breaking down low blocks. We saw Belgium have trouble against Morocco breaking down that low block today. We saw South Korea having trouble against Uruguay, and vice versa when South Korea sat back. So I think that's something that we're going to continue to see. Having said that, I actually believe that within the playing field, this has been an excellent World Cup. We've had upsets like Saudi Arabia against Argentina. We've had ferocious games like Mexico against Argentina. And by the way, another example of an Argentine team having a lot of trouble breaking down that defensive block. The problem is, for Mexico, when you have Messi breaking the deadlock and you have no rhythm, how do you get back into a game like that? The answer is that you don't. But because we've had upsets and we have had these games like Portugal-Ghana that have been close and have had edgy moments, I would say that right now I'd give this tournament a B to a B plus in terms of entertainment.
Charlotte FC fans would not be happy with me if I didn't bring up Karol Świderski. Hasn't been able to have an impact for this Polish side right now. Do you think he's a player that the Polish national team should be utilizing on the field?
Yes, I really do. And I tweeted something to that effect before the tournament started when Poland played Chile, and he was a starter in that game. But what was very evident to me, and again, this is, you know, just touching on that theme that I was just talking about 2 seconds ago, was that going forward, Poland is a team that is quite one-dimensional, right? Mm-hmm. They want to hit the ball wide to the wingbacks, and they want to get Lewandowski to create something. And what we've seen in this tournament is that Lewandowski hasn't had a player alongside him who can facilitate. And we know that Świderski is a facilitator. The other guys like Piontek, you know, are more number nines, you know, prototypical goal scorers. Of course, you've got somebody like Zielinski who's there, but he has become such a star player for them that he gets more attention from defenders. So I think that adding a playmaker like Świderski to that 11 would make it a little bit easier for Lewandowski and Zielinski to find more space to create dangerous moments. I would not be surprised if we saw Świderski start against Argentina. Especially because they're going to expect Argentina to have a lot of possession. And so you want somebody who can make something happen very quickly in transition with one or two good touches. Because, you know, as you guys know, well, one of the attributes that really stuck out about Shuderski is his ability to protect the ball in possession. So I'd love him to start that game. I would think that he'll have an impact, and I wouldn't be surprised if Lewandowski is having a word with his head coach saying, hey, can you get that Charlotte FC player in there? Because he's quite good.
One more from me, just in general, about the group that Portugal's in. I'm sure that you're expecting them to get out of the group. Who do you think gets out with them? Because it feels wide open.
It does feel wide open. And I think that we'll know a lot more after Portugal plays Uruguay. I think after the first win, I think Portugal will finish top. Because even though I was quite impressed with some of South Korea's play, which play typical Paulo Bento soccer. And for people who don't know, Paulo Bento was the coach of the Portuguese national team for a very long time. One of the worst performances in World Cup history was with him in charge in 2014. Although that was a pretty imbalanced team, an injured Cristiano Ronaldo, who did nothing on the defensive side of things, played against the U.S., 1-1, famous game, and then played Ghana as well in that group. It seems that Portugal and Ghana tend to play each other a lot in international competition. Look, I think Portugal, pound for pound, have the most talent, but they have the vulnerabilities that I already mentioned. I think Uruguay, even though they played such an ugly game, are still a very dangerous team. And I would argue that if Uruguay finishes second and they face Brazil, they have exactly the type of approach and players that could spring a surprise against Brazil. They're battle-hardened. You know, they play at top clubs. And you saw that the Brazilians against Serbia had a little bit of trouble also breaking down the lower block.
Yes,
but the difference between Uruguay and Serbia is that Uruguay have three players in the middle. Betancourt, you know, obviously the big one is Valverde, who are just very strong and can keep possession even though they're not the most creative players in the world. All this to say that I expect Portugal and Uruguay to go through. But I think that, like we're seeing with Group C, with Argentina, Poland, Mexico, and who am I missing here?
Saudi Arabia.
I think it's going to go right till the last minute. I think we'll see the same thing with Group H.
Since Jason is making you put your money where your mouth is, I'll do it as well. Last one from me. Who lifts the World Cup in 2022?
Well, my pick has been Brazil all the way through. Just because of depth and also balance. And add to that the key factor now, for the wrong reasons, Neymar. I think Neymar right now is the best player in the world. In the form that he's been in at PSG is electric. He and Messi, I mean, that relationship has been unbelievable. But the difference between Messi and Neymar is that Neymar has a lot more pieces in the attacking third to play with. That's not to take anything away from Lautaro Martinez and Angel Di Maria. I just think that there are more options in terms of profiles for Brazil that he can play off of. However, the question now is, when are we going to see Neymar again? And he's the one player on that team that you just can't replicate, right? So I think they're in trouble without him, but I think that he'll recover in time for the late stages. So I still have Brazil. It also needs to be said, France have looked unbelievable because not only are they disciplined structurally under Deschamps, but with the kind of confidence that Mbappe's playing with, Griezmann, and then the blessing in disguise, which I tweeted about and I thought I'd get a deluge of criticism, which I didn't. I think Benzema being knocked out of this tournament is a godsend for France because in terms of balance, Giroud is much more of a compliment for those two aforementioned players than Benzema was.
Let everybody know where they can find all your Twitter hot takes and maybe yell at you if you say something they don't like.
Well, listen, I don't know if you guys saw my hot takes about the U.S. men's national team and the abuse that I've been taking over the last 24 to 48
hours.
No,
I alluded to your take about the negativity of U.S. men's national team Twitter on our show. I thought that was a very accurate take, EK.
Thank you.
Yeah. I just, you know, what can I say about U.S. National team supporters? They're capricious at best. Where they can find me at Eric Krakauer on Twitter, and that's where I'll give you my, you know, semi-hot takes, my warm takes.
Thanks for giving us a few warm takes today. Really, really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Anytime.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh,